Hey, it's Jen. Just a quick heads up before we start the show. The news is rapidly developing, and things may have changed by the time you hear this episode. For the very latest news, tune into your public radio station and follow updates at npr.org. This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. The Congress of the United States of America has confirmed Joe Biden as the winner of the 2020 presidential election. But lawmakers spent as much time discussing the events that unfolded at the Capitol before Biden was confirmed as they did discussing the events of early November.
To those who wreaked havoc in our Capitol today, you did not win.
When I arrived in Washington this morning, I fully intended to object to the certification of the electoral votes. However, the events that have transpired today have forced me to reconsider.
We will not be kept out of this chamber by thugs, mobs, or threats.
Now we gather due to a selfish man's injured pride and the outrage of supporters who he has deliberately misinformed for the past 2 months and stirred to action this very morning. What happened here today was an insurrection incited by the President of the United States.
That was Vice President Mike Pence, followed by Republican Senators Kelly Loeffler, Mitch McConnell, and Mitt Romney. HuffPost politics reporter Igor Bobik was in the Capitol building earlier that day when a mob of pro-Trump supporters stormed the building. What you're hearing now is sound from a video he filmed inside. A lone officer is being pushed further into the building by the angry mob. It took Capitol Police 4 hours to clear the building. In the end, two pipe bombs and a cooler of Molotov cocktails were found, and 4 people were dead. 3 died from medical emergencies. A 4th was shot and killed by police. Igor Bobik joins us. He's the politics reporter for HuffPost. Igor, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, WAMU reporter Debbie Truong. She was on the ground tracking the progress of the rioters. Debbie, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Igor, tell us what you saw and experienced inside the Capitol building.
Well, I was in the middle of reporting on what was supposed to be a ceremonial and traditional certification of electoral votes when I heard a commotion. I was on the second floor of the Senate. I heard some shouting, some yelling. I ran downstairs to the first floor where I immediately ran into this lone, courageous police officer trying to hold at bay a group of 20 or so Trump supporters. Angry Trump supporters who were had breached the Capitol, and at this point we had no idea that they had yet breached. This officer had not drawn his weapon, but was wielding a baton, trying to hold the crowd back, but was ultimately unable to do so and forced to retreat up the steps and into a hallway directly next to the Senate chamber itself, prompting a confrontation between him and other police officers. And a tense scene before ultimately some of the same protesters had forced their way into the Senate chamber and even onto the well of the Senate, where minutes earlier the senators themselves were debating this electoral certification.
And you can see video that Igor shot at 1-8 on Twitter. Igor, what's the scene at the Capitol following these events?
The scene is much calmer. We've been given all clear. Not many people here, much less reduced police presence. There are, however, still evidence of the struggle and the violence from yesterday. Broken glass on the ground, broken windows, broken furniture, bullet holes from the shots that were fired. So still some remnants of the tragedy and the horror yesterday.
Debbie, how did the insurrection progress as the sun went down in Washington?
Sure. So I arrived at the Capitol yesterday around 4 p.m. Thousands of Trump loyalists were on the steps and scaffolding outside the building, shouting things like fight for Trump. They were antagonizing the police who were outside guarding the building, calling them traitors. As we got closer to the city's 6 p.m. curfew, D.C. police, you know, started using flashbangs and tear gas to try and clear some of the protesters, but hundreds of people still remained even after the curfew. Over the course of several hours, I saw police trying to regain control of the situation, and eventually the number of law enforcement who were out there vastly outnumbered the protesters, who kept getting pushed further and further away from the Capitol. Eventually, around 8 or 9 p.m., the group had really gotten a lot smaller to maybe several dozen people. And I know that D.C. police said that they arrested, you know, dozens of people for curfew violations.
Now, you spoke to a man named Vincent outside the Capitol building.
I don't wish any bodily harm on anybody. But the question is, what does it take to have your voice heard? How far do you have to go for us to make a change? This is the people's building.
Debbie, tell us more about some of the people you spoke to.
Sure. So a lot of the people that I spoke to yesterday echoed a lot of the same things that we've heard Trump supporters say in the aftermath of the election. You know, they feel that the election was somehow stolen despite there being no evidence of such. And then a lot of the people that I talked to were still trying to sort out their feelings on the mob that forced their way into the building. You know, some people thought it was an inappropriate use of force. Others felt that it was necessary in getting Congress's attention.
Well, once it reconvened, each joint session went differently than expected. Several Republican senators who planned to object to the Electoral College count, including Senators Loeffler, Lankford, and Daines, instead voted in support of affirming Biden's win. Igor, what do you make of their about-face?
They really, you know, saw what happened yesterday, and were there was an active effort among other Republican senators to wrap up the show, just because of the awful scenery and tragic events, especially after a woman had been shot. So some of them absolutely felt pressure to back down. Others who have been mentioned as possible presidential candidates stuck to their guns, people like Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz.
Well, we got a lot of messages on our 1A Vox Pop, and I want to play this one from Rachel in San Antonio.
I am so deeply saddened to think that all these peaceful protesters have been treated so harshly in our country in this and previous years. And yet when people who are traitors and trying to overthrow our government are storming the Capitol, the lack of force used against them allows them to terrorize.
And we should say, this summer, D.C. police arrested more than 300 people in connection with the Black Lives Matter demonstration. Right now, we know at least 15 rioters were arrested by D.C. police for, quote, protest-related charges. 42 more were arrested for violating the city's 6 p.m. curfew. Debbie, have the D.C. police said anything about their tactics?
Sure. I mean, I think in this situation, it's important to make the distinction between U.S. Capitol Police and local D.C. police. The U.S. Capitol Police, which is part of the federal government, is responsible for policing the Capitol and its grounds. I've seen a lot of criticism from members of the D.C. Council that the Capitol Police did not do enough to stop the insurrection. Especially when you recall that during the Black Lives Matter protests over the summer, that federal police used tear gas and flashbangs to clear a path for President Trump to have a photo op in front of St. John's Church. That being said, you know, I was out there last night, and there were local D.C. police outside the Capitol trying to push the pro-Trump supporters away from the building. You know, I saw them surround some pro-Trump supporters in the way that they did with the protesters who were demonstrating for racial justice over the summer, but I don't think that there was the same level of force that I saw over the summer.
Debbie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR.
. 2020 had a lot of us rethinking our lives. 2021, Life Kit wants to help you make those changes, whether they're big or small. All this January, Life Kit will give you smart tips to think through your next decision. Listen now to the Life Kit podcast from NPR.
This is 1A. We're talking about the insurrection at the Capitol. Now let's bring another voice into the conversation. Brandi Zadrozny covers disinformation for NBC News. Brandi, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So, Brandi, you've covered the Republican Party before. As someone whose beat is disinformation, what was your reaction?
Absolute non-surprise. Hmm. This was incredibly predictable. You know, I watched this happen, thankfully to Igor's amazing coverage, too, which I'm just so in awe of. But I watched the events sort of unfold and was connected with my colleague and reporting partner, Ben Collins. And we were just like, of course, mm-hmm. You know, for the last several years, but particularly since COVID, we have just seen a ramp up in disinformation. And what that's been is we've seen this sort of many-headed monster form of militia groups who have been out in the streets armed, terrorizing Black Lives Matter protesters and state legislatures. You know, these are the same groups that plotted to kidnap the governor of Michigan. We've seen them. We've seen QAnon ramp up. It's increased online some tenfold, according to some of the analysis we did over the last year. We've seen the president parroting QAnon talking points about the election and the so-called stealing of it. And then we've seen anti-maskers, anti-vaxxers going to these anti-lockdown protests all throughout the spring and summer. So when this happened, the day before it happened, we published a story that said online on the Donald, which is an online forum for Donald Trump, which was banned from Reddit, and in various other spaces, including normal platforms like Twitter, people are saying they're gonna storm the Capitol. They're saying that they're going to threaten lawmakers. They're saying that they're gonna bring guns. And we knew that they were saying that because we could see the posts, but it's weird. The internet is this weird space where for a long time, people thought there was this big separation between online and IRL, but there is no distinction. What people say online is what they mean. It's how they get their news. It's how they communicate with each other. It's how they organize. And it's how they get their, you know, belief systems now. And we have to start paying attention.
We also want to bring a couple of other voices into the conversation. With us right now is McKay Coppins. He's a staff writer at The Atlantic. He's also the author of The Wilderness, Deep Inside the Republican Party's Combative, Contentious, Chaotic Quest to Take Back the White House. McKay, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Senator Ben Cardin. He's a Democratic senator from Maryland, and he was on Capitol Hill yesterday. Senator Cardin, thank you for making time for us.
My pleasure. It's good to be with you.
So, Senator, tell us what happened when the Capitol building was under siege from your perspective. What was the experience of you and your staff as this mob entered the building?
Well, it was one of the darkest moments of my life, in our country's life. It was a tragic invasion of our democracy. Yes, there was concern about the safety of the members of Congress. We were hurried out of the chamber in a way that raised concerns as to whether our personal safety was at risk. But it was really the safety of our democracy that I think we were concerned about. A president of the United States that was encouraging insurrection, and he couldn't do it alone. He needed to be enabled by others who held important positions that fueled the lies given by the president. A president that we were on the floor to ratify or accept the votes of the electors for the presidency and the vice presidency. And we have a president who is fueling the misconception and lies to the American people about the fraudulent election that was not fraudulent, which was a gift to our adversaries and autocratic leaders. All that sort of built up as we were attacked in the Congress of the United States and those sacred halls invaded by mobs and insurrectors. So it was a very, very difficult day. And one, of course, in my mind, will go down similar to 9/11 for me, or the assassination of John F. Kennedy, when we saw a real attack on our system of government.
A handful of senators who planned to object changed their minds, but many members of Congress still did object. And I'd love to hear what you think about that decision on their part.
Well, you know, prior to the insurrection, this was just a very, very dangerous thing to do, to challenge the votes of the people of this country. As it was said on the floor many times, if those challenges would have been upheld, we're basically saying that Congress can select the president of the United States, not the voters of this country. And that is just such a dangerous path to go down. So there was real concern as to how so many members of the House could sign the objections and how it got support from any senators. At the end of the day, there were a handful of senators who voted for the objection, but it's a part of our history now that never should have happened. I was very pleased to see so many of my colleagues on both the Democratic and Republican side point out the danger of this path. And of course, with the president fueling it, it led to the mob violence.
What about accountability for President Trump? He has less than 2 weeks remaining in his presidency. Dozens of Democrats in Congress are calling for his impeachment. What do you think accountability for the president should look like?
Well, we have a practical problem in that there's 13 days remaining before Joe Biden becomes president of the United States. So any procedures that we would initiate would probably take longer than those 13 days. This is a very dangerous period for our country. We've seen the president throughout his four-year term cause significant damage to this country by violating his oath of office, by violating the power of the president, and by lying to the American people. We've seen unrest in our country that was fueled by the president, and then it sort of hit the pinnacle yesterday with the attack on the Congress. So we got to keep a close eye. I'm not sure we have a way of preventing him during these next 13 days. We know the people around him enable him, so the people around him need to stand up. They need to be counted. They can't feed this person's ego at the detriment to our national security and the health of the people of this nation. So we hope people will stand up. There is certain procedures that can be employed, and they need to be looked at. I sort of agreed with Tom Friedman's assessment that the Republican leadership should be in the White House telling the president it's time for him to resign. I mean, today. And that, to me, is what should be done, and that if he doesn't resign, they should look for joining us in the ways that we can prevent the president from doing more harm to our country.
We've also heard there are discussions about invoking the 25th Amendment. Is that something you'd support?
Well, it's a cumbersome process. Clearly, it requires first the support from the cabinet. And as you know, the president, most of the really credible members of his cabinet are no longer there. So to me, that's a practical problem as to whether the president surrounded himself with so many people to feed his ego, whether they, in fact, could initiate that process. If we get that type of petition, then I think Congress would act quickly.
McKay, I want to come to you because you've covered the Republican Party for a long time. And watching what unfolded, what was going through your mind?
Yeah, you know, the first thought I had when the first kind of images of the breach started coming across my computer screen, and then, of course, I turned on the television and started calling sources and whatnot. The first thought I had was just that this is what happens when a political party indulges the worst instincts of its base over and over and over again. This has been a prominent element of the Trump era, but really it goes back decades. You know, a couple of years ago, I spent a lot of time reporting on Newt Gingrich. And, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, he made a very deliberate calculation that the Republican Party would benefit by blowing up the bipartisan consensus in the House and the Senate and turning politics into blood sport, turning it into kind of a clash of good versus evil. And those narratives have permeated our political discourse and the way that we think and talk about politics for decades now. And, you know, I think most people in Congress, Republican and Democrat, on some level understand what their job is. But I think that their job is to legislate, that their job is to work with each other and find consensus and compromise when it's necessary. But what the base of their party wants is these constant routine revolutionary stands. And, you know, I talked to Jeff Flake, the former Arizona senator, this week, and he said sometimes the job of a representative, sometimes the job of a senator or a congressman is to tell their constituents when they're wrong. Tell them when they're all wet was the wording that Jeff Flake used. And there's been far too little of that. The millions of Americans believe right now that the presidential election was stolen. They believe that because Donald Trump told them that over and over again. And the Republicans who know better in Congress have decided by and large to stand by the president, to humor him, as some have put it. And the chickens came home to roost yesterday. They saw the result of humoring that kind of dangerous conspiracy theory.
Senator, when you think about the country President-elect Biden is inheriting as he steps into office, how much do you think he really can do to heal this breach?
Well, there's clearly significant damage that's been done to our country. There's no question about it. It's not just a breach, a divide. We have a divide, America. We've always had a division. People have different views. But what has happened now, we see a division of either almost like we're enemies, almost like a civil war. And we saw the violence that's led to. And as Jeff Flake said, we do have a responsibility to tell our constituents the truth. That's a fundamental responsibility we all have, to be honest with our constituents. So the characteristic of Joe Biden, he's an experienced legislator. He understands to get things done, you have to work across party line. He is going to be straight with the American people. He's going to tell them exactly how things are. And I don't think he's going to be as concerned about being as popular every day with a base, as we saw clearly with President Trump. No one's going to be like President Trump. He's an anomaly, let's be perfectly frank about it. But he was enabled by so many other people in responsible positions that fed his irresponsible behavior. I don't think you'll see that come under the Biden administration in any sort of way. And I think that he will start the healing process. But make no mistake about it, the damage has been done. So many people believe that this was a stolen election.
Well, and we only have about 30 seconds left with you, Senator. Hundreds of people broke into the Capitol. They were allowed to leave without being arrested. What would you like to see happen?
I'd like to see them arrested. I'll tell you that. I'd like to see them prosecuted. I don't understand how the Capitol was breached as easily as it was. I understand there was a large attendance, don't get me wrong. And the first order is to protect public safety. But I want those responsible for this behavior held accountable in their criminal courts.
Senator Cardin, thanks for making time for us.
My pleasure. Stay safe. Thanks.
Well, we have to take a quick break, but we'll continue our discussion and hear some more of your reactions to the insurrection at the Capitol right after this. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR.
At Planet Money, we are also grappling with what's going on in the world.
We just don't know, and you're still going to have to decide.
So we call up economists like Emily Oster.
It's like we're fighting the pandemic by having a bake sale or something. Exactly. I mean, all due respect to bake sales.
Exactly.
Listen and subscribe to Planet Money from NPR.
Let's get back to the insurrection on Capitol Hill. President Trump gave his own statement on his Twitter feed, and we're not going to play it because even while calling for peace, the president is still pushing conspiracy theories. Instead, we're going to play part of Republican Senator Mitt Romney's speech on the Senate floor.
No congressional audit is ever going to convince these voters, particularly when the president will continue to say that the election was stolen. The best way we can show respect for the voters who are upset is by telling them the truth.
Brandy, would anything short of the truth from congressional Republicans, but even more so from the president himself, manage to convince his supporters that the election wasn't stolen? And at this point, would even that be enough?
I mean, I don't know how you put something like this back in the box, you know? I mean, since for years, Trump has been saying that elections that he didn't win were rigged against him. He started seeding with the mail-in ballots thing that would cause the rigging of this election in March of 2020, and then continued just nonstop and is still going. And I think, and the you keep moving the goalposts with these people. At first it was like, oh, well, lawsuits will vindicate us, and then recounts, and then now we just need to see the signatures. And at this point, the delusion is so hardwired. I don't know how you change that around. And more importantly, as you suggest, I think even the most recent statement from the president shows that he has no intention of letting go of the claim that this election was stolen from him, even though there's no basis in fact. And I can't tell if he believes that, but it seems to me on the call with Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, you know, he's just spewed these internet conspiracies baked and grown on QAnon forums and, you know, terrible web forums like 4chan, just all of these crazy lies, but really seem to have conviction for them. So, I mean, it seems like he's, my colleague says, high on his own supply, and I don't know how we fix that.
Well, before pandemonium broke out, Senate Leader Mitch McConnell told his colleagues he would vote to certify the election.
Nothing before us proves illegality anywhere near the massive scale that would have tipped the entire election. Nor can public doubt alone justify a radical break when the doubt itself was incited without any evidence.
I want to pair that with this email we got from Mary, who says, I believe the media elected President Trump. Every comment, every gaffe, every non-compassionate action was covered relentlessly and gave him untold amounts of free airtime. Brilliant. Now all the coverage will give these Trump-supporting protesters a lot of free airtime and will grow their support. Just quietly prosecute them and move on. McKay, I take Mary's point, but even when Trump leaves office, Trumpism isn't going anywhere. So is it quite that straightforward?
It's not that straightforward. And I understand the critiques of the media, and I share a lot of them. I don't think that the media has always handled, we in the press have always handled the Donald Trump presidency well. Certainly the 2016 campaign, I think, was a mistake. But, you know, set all of that aside, the reality is that Republicans in Congress who were inside that building yesterday when an armed mob stormed the Capitol knew on some level, and we saw the evidence of that last night when they reconvened, that mob represented a lot of their constituents, right? That the people who were storming the Capitol because they believed the election was stolen, because they believe these conspiracy theories, they're not an isolated group. That is representative of a lot of the Donald Trump movement. And as you say, when Donald Trump leaves office, those attitudes and those feelings and those ideas are still going to be dominant in a large swath of the American electorate. So we can't just ignore Donald Trump and have those ideas go away. I do think, you know, you just made the decision, for example, on this show, not to play a video the president released that included several lies and conspiracy theories that helped incite the violence yesterday. I think that we can make decisions like that. But I think that on some level, we need to continue to grapple with and engage with and cover this movement, because the movement is not going away.
Well, and we hear from Republican leaders like Mitch McConnell, Mitt Romney, and they are taking a stronger stance now. But how much does that matter at this point, McKay?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's hard to attribute much moral courage to Republicans who have decided in the final 2 weeks of the Trump presidency to speak out against him. I would say Mitt Romney, who I've covered a good amount, has actually spoken up routinely throughout his presidency. He's the only Republican who voted to remove him from office, for example. But you know, a lot. It's not just in Congress. We've seen a number of members of the White House staff announce their resignations in the past 24 hours, and there are reports that more are to come. And you know, that's fine for what it is, and people certainly have that right. But I don't think that you know a lot of these people just now realized what they were enabling when they went to work for Donald Trump or when they promoted him or championed him or defended him over the past 4 years. he is the same man now as he was when he ran for president in 2016. And he's running, you know, he has the same ideas and instincts that he had in 2016. And I think what we're actually seeing among a lot of Republicans now is reputation management and legacy management. And there's certainly a sense that what happened yesterday is going to end up in the history books, and they want to scramble to the right side of history at the last minute. And I'm just not sure that that's going to have much effect on this movement and the mood of the country, you know, certainly come January 20th.
Well, Brandy, it's interesting. McKay mentions the history books, but how did the far right internet cover what happened?
With glee, people were really, really excited about what they were seeing. The Donald people, just sort of hardcore, more of the troll variety, were having a great time. They love Donald Trump and they hate everyone else. Same is true for QAnon and everyone else. Every time when they were watching the rally and they were still sort of hopeful that Pence could sort of pull this Pence card and magically make Donald Trump stay president, when it became clear because Pence issued this letter that said, I don't have that authority, that Pence wasn't going to do that, everyone turned on Pence and said, you know, suddenly he should be marched out into the street and executed. He was a traitor. You know, I think McKay hit it really well that these people are, you know, loyal to Donald Trump. And where that loyalty goes once he's no longer president is still sort of a mystery and up for debate. But these communities are here to stay, and they were absolutely fed by what happened yesterday.
Igor, pro-Trump extremists were seemingly allowed to linger in and around the Capitol building for hours. What more do we know about how Capitol Police responded?
We don't know much yet. We're actually still waiting for more information. There has not been a briefing yet, either from the federal law enforcement or the local D.C. Police Department or the Capitol Police, which are notoriously loath to say anything publicly about their tactics because of security. So we're still waiting to find out more. I know that I'm here at the Capitol now, and I've seen groups of Capitol Police officers doing surveys. They're beginning cleanup efforts. So I think an investigation will get underway at some point. Of course, the Senate and the House have both recessed until January 20th. So I don't think we're going to see action on that front for a little while.
Representative Ilhan Omar says she's drafting up impeachment papers. Representative Cori Bush says she has a resolution to expel members of Congress who enabled the extremists. We know CBS News is reporting that members of cabinet are considering the 25th Amendment. Igor, do any of these efforts have a chance of going anywhere?
It's right now, at least, it's looking like not a very good shot. Republicans are not ready to go there yet. Even Mitt Romney, you know, I talked to him about this yesterday. He doesn't think that there's really enough time for Congress to take up impeachment proceedings. Of course, he's the only Republican who voted to impeach Donald Trump in the past. This morning, we learned that the first Hill Republican, Adam Kinzinger of Illinois, had called for the invocation of the 25th Amendment. Of course, he's a frequent critic of of the president, so I'm not sure that many more of his colleagues will follow. Yesterday, you saw more than half of the Republican caucus in the House actually vote to throw out the election results. So they're still firmly in Donald Trump's camp at this point.
We've been talking to McKay Coppins. He's a staff writer with The Atlantic and the author of The Wilderness. Also, politics reporter Igor Bobick with HuffPost and disinformation reporter Brandy Zadrozny of NBC News. Thanks to you all. Today's conversation was produced by Paige Osborne and Avery Kleinman. It was edited by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk again soon. This is 1A.